Yesterday, we heard from Kathleen Gillespie. In 1990, her husband was killed by the IRA along with five soldiers in Cosh Quinn outside Derry. And she was heartbroken, she said, that she would now not see justice. That was her words. And she said the only place she may be able to get consolation now is the fact that those responsible for the abduction and murder of her husband would be ravaged by their own conscience, and perhaps in the next life they may face some kind of final judgment on it. That is where she is looking for some kind of relief or reassurance. So let's talk about the moral issue, the religious take on all this, by some of our church leaders here. Joining us is the Reverend Dr. David Bruce, moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland. And we also welcome Father Eddie McGee, Director of Communications with the Diocese of Down and Connor. Welcome both. Eddie McGee, at the risk of being too theological on this, but I think it's a fair question. In your faith, do you believe that someone who has committed a murder, an atrocity, but has never owned up to it, has never been held to account for it, do they have a place in heaven?
Declan, good evening. I think the first and foremost thing to say is that, you know, the families here have a right to seek justice. You know, justice is a key concept in the moral code of Christianity, and the seeking of justice. You know, that these proposals not only say that the families may not get justice, but it takes away the possibility even of seeking justice. You know, justice and truth and reconciliation. These are very much the language of the moral code of Christianity. And as a church, we would be saying that these should be enshrined and protected in the civic forum as well.
What about that issue of those who have never admitted or owned up to what they've done in the afterlife? As you see it, as you believe the afterlife to be.
Well, I suppose we would make the distinction between legislation, which is the a determination whether a crime has been committed against law, and the moral code, which is the evaluation of whether something is right or wrong against the moral code. Someone who does not engage with, you know, with facing justice of their actions certainly would be behaving and acting in an immoral way.
Dr. David Bruce, welcome. What's your take on that? Because people like Kathleen Gillespie have faith, and they are now, without justice appearing to be manageable through the judicial system, are turning to kind of an ultimate justice. What do you say to them?
Lots to say to that, Declan, and thank you for having me on this evening. Look, families are very different in their approaches to this, and that's a very powerful story that you've related to us. And one feels, of course, as a pastor and minister for these, the anguish that lies behind that kind of bereavement and family tragedy. But, you know, families come to different points and places in this, and we certainly are getting stories within the Presbyterian tradition of people saying to us, yes, there have been murders, there have been tragedies of this kind, and as a family, we actually do not wish at this point to pursue this through the courts. That's not where we are as a family. Whereas there are others also within our tradition who are saying the opposite, and for whom today's and yesterday's announcements and the statement and then the command paper which followed have caused the deepest distress, because it appears to have subtracted hope. It's crushed and it's been despairing for them. Now, you ask a question about the gospel and about the ultimacy of justice, which, of course, belongs to God, and that is true. But within the heart of the gospel itself, and this is partly why we shape our responses in the way that we're doing, there is this important combination of love from God that reaches out to us in our brokenness as well as our sinfulness, but also the satisfaction of justice. And in the gospel, Christmas gives us one. It gives us God reaching out to us in love. But Easter gives us this clear demonstration of the satisfaction of justice. And you cannot have one without the other. If reconciliation with God, and indeed reconciliation within a community, is to be achieved, these are two vital components that inform our jurisprudence, just as they inform our theology and the way that we position dealing with issues of this kind. This is a deep tragedy that we're witnessing, I believe, before us.
Father McGee, if the right to seek justice, as some would see it, is taken away, how does that seep out and affect society?
I think there are two things here. First of all, I spoke to Declan and yourselves 2 months ago at the Ballymurphy inquest. Yes. And the solace that is achieved through truth and justice, we should not undermine the solace that families get from receiving truth and justice. That's so important. I think also from the whole area of trauma, if we try to abrogate and deny the feelings and emotions and the real emotions that have been visible in response to these proposals, if we try to close down the hurt and pain that is there, it doesn't do away with it, doesn't go away, and our society here in Northern Ireland needs to engage with that pain and that hurt in order to address it properly.
But given that many families might never achieve truth or justice, do you think that it's time, as some would see it, for that line to be drawn in the sand, however traumatic that might be at an individual level?
I think what I'm hearing over these last number of days is that the families are not in a place to draw that line. In responding to truth and responding to trauma, you need to collaborate and engage with the person who's working through the journey of where they are at. And the families are not in a place of drawing a line at this point. And that's so important to hear.
David Bruce, I agree with that. Yeah.
Right, okay. If the churches offer anything, they are surely providers of moral guidance, and that entails a kind of a moral metric. Do you believe those who support these proposals are making the wrong moral judgment?
Firstly, I don't think it is particularly surprising that this government has once again unilaterally decided, frankly, how to proceed on an issue that so desperately needs a local, sensitive, compassionate and collaborative approach, locally driven, locally shaped. So I think there's form here, and that has a moral dimension. You don't talk with the people who are most profoundly affected, then you're engaging in a process of, well, it's effectively arrogant bullying, isn't it? Now, as a pastor, I know that you can't simply draw a line under grief, and our previous speaker is absolutely right. You can't legislate it away. Grief is visceral. It doesn't work like that. It can't be switched on and off. But for those victims and survivors who do seek due process and justice in the courts for their loved ones, perfectly entitled to do, this remains important to them, and I believe will help them in their journey. And it certainly could not be denied them. And there is a moral deficit created if this is legislated away, as it appears to be done, particularly in paragraph 34 of the command document. It not only denies them of any chance of justice, whatever the likelihood and the slim chances of prosecutions, it also profoundly denies them of hope. And from a pastor's point of view, this is, I suppose, my primary concern here. Now, we've obviously studied the command paper. There are good things in it. Let's be open about that. But it is very scant on detail when it comes to the truth and recovery process, which is one of the four key principles previously committed to by government. And it also says very little about meaningful and genuine reconciliation, for that matter. It's disappointing.
Sorry to interrupt. Dr. Bruce, I'm just interested to know what you think that moral deficit, as you describe it, how that might manifest itself in terms of reconciliation, because we're decades on now from the peace process.
Reconciliation is a process. It grows, it's organic, and depends upon open relationships and good communications, which in turn rest upon trust. Now, these dynamics take years to construct. particularly when they are framed as we are here in the context of historic mistrust and division. Now, it's a very delicate balance and very easily upset. Something like this, which, driven for whatever motives from Westminster, and who will ever really know what the motives are, has the potential to profoundly upset and to undermine the trust which, as it were, paves the road towards the possibility of reconciliation. Because reconciliation depends upon not only an acknowledgement of guilt. You were talking at the start of this piece about people who haven't acknowledged their crimes. Well, that's a profound issue, and the New Testament is very clear about the necessity of repentance as a demonstration of sincerity of heart and the desire to be changed. Now, if that is absent, what hope is there really for reconciliation?
Okay.
That's clearly an issue.
Thanks
very much. But similarly, if justice is removed, then where is the hope, where is the prospect of reconciliation there either?
Thank you very much both, Reverend Dr. David Bruce, moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, and also Father Eddie McGee from the Diocese of Down and Connor.